Blog Talk Radio.
Request of our guest is East meets West, and that sounds kind of Dr. Seuss, but that's all right. When Infinite Tennis thinks East, though, it's thinking Asia, but North Carolina is close. Today on the show, we have Sterling Strother, who selected the Rock introduction for the show today, and he is a tennis professional who coaches in Cary, North Carolina. The seed for this show was planted in a backyard going-away party for a friend. Sterling and I were there having a very high-energy discussion, and that's when East meets West came about. So get ready to have some fun, because there's a lot of energy going to be on this show today, and we might talk a little trash, so don't be offended. We're going to go away for a quick message here. And then when we come back, we're going to bring Sterling onto the show.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Hello, Sterling. How are you?
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Things are great here. How's everything in China today? Because it's East meets West.
That's right. It's dandy. Great weather here this morning, and I've already been on the court with a couple of my six-year-olds, so it was just fantastic.
All right, terrific. So thanks for coming on. So, Sterling, tell me a little bit about where you are from originally.
I am actually originally from Cary, North Carolina, one of the few natives that's still hanging around here.
That's good. And then how did you get started in tennis?
I started about 8 years old. And my mother played and got me involved, sent me to a summer camp over at my alma mater, NC State, and just started there and just loved it from the beginning. I grew up playing lots of sports, baseball, football, basketball, anything I could play, I would. So tennis, when I got on the court, it was great because I was just able to just kind of get in the flow and the rhythm because I'd already been involved in a lot of different kinds of sports already.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing for development, overall athleticism. So how did your playing career turn out? What did you do with that?
Well, I played some junior tennis growing up, and then I ended up playing in high school. I played other sports as well, so tennis was kind of a part of that whole process. Then I played in high school. It was great. And ended up actually, funny, I actually snow skied in college. You know, I was on the ski team. Funny about that. But I continued playing some club tennis. And throughout college, my wife played D1 tennis. And ended up marrying her. So I grew up in a big tennis family. So I really started taking off when I was 18, 19. That's when I actually started getting into teaching.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's interesting how there are different paths to the same thing, and not everyone takes the traditional, you know, you played juniors and became a champion necessarily and then got into coaching because you were such a talented player. But you know, coaching is definitely a different thing. So
what was interesting is actually growing up playing tennis, I enjoyed playing the game more than actually thinking about winning, and I would tend to break down other people's strokes on the other side. Like, man, if they did this, they'd be cool. And so that's how I leaned to that whole teaching or motivating, instructing pathway, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree with you that there's this kind of a mindset that coaches have, and there's kind of a talent for understanding kind of the flow of energy and how best efficiency. And there are a lot of things that are universal in certain sports, those types of principles. I sometimes feel like I could coach almost any sport because of the many years that I've spent, you know, observing efficient movement. So I've actually gone to my daughter's swim coach and said, hey, I saw a girl and she was doing this and it looked like it wasn't very efficient. What do you think? And then he would say, oh, yeah, can you go tell her to do this? So
exactly.
It's kind of funny. So,
right.
So now, what are you currently doing in Cary? What's going on? What are you doing?
Currently I'm coaching. We're in the varsity girls season at the school I coach at, Cary Academy. And then I'm also involved, obviously, day-to-day running junior tennis through Excel Tennis and working with kids from anywhere from 5 to 18 and just mainly high school kids in their performance, helping them get better wherever they are, whether they're aspiring to get a college scholarship or whether they're just trying to get better at whatever level they're at. So that's where I am right now, and it's a blast, having a great time.
So your program's at the school?
No, it's not actually at the school. It's at a private club here in Cary called Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I do a lot of the private instruction off-site from the school.
Yeah, that's nice. So coaching at Wimbledon, that's pretty good. You know, I can,
yeah.
Like a lot of people
would
like to say
that. They're like, you're a pro at Wimbledon. I go, yes. So anyway,
yeah, you know, there's only one place to go from there, and that's down, right? So, okay. Now, who's influenced you the most as a coach? Who are your coaching mentors?
You know, I would say that there's a gentleman right there in your backyard. His name's Ken DeHart. Actually, that's where I was, you know, on an adventure up there about a month ago and ended up running into you. But I would say Ken DeHart and another gentleman that I coach with on a regular basis, side by side, and that's Cameron Moore here in Cary. I think those two guys have been extremely influential. PTR is just a great place where I've been able to pick up relationships and just really just develop myself as a tennis coach. And that's just been great, you know.
Yeah, what would you say is like the number? What are a couple of principles that you picked up from Ken that are kind of the core of your teaching?
Well, I would say number foremost would be simplicity. I think sometimes we as coaches, we can just convolute the whole process of learning how to play the game. So just simplistic ideas, phrases. Language, the language you use, very important, such as touching the ball instead of hitting the ball, finish instead of follow through, just things like that. Just language to me is extremely important because, you know, when you're teaching six-year-olds, you can't use the type of language you use with a 16-year-old, and you just got to, and then some things transcend from one age to another or go back and forth, so. But I think keeping it simple, keeping it fun. I just, you know, you can be intense and be fun, but it takes a lot. I mean, as a coach, you've really got to you really got to work at that. I mean, it doesn't come overnight. You can't just, you know, it comes through experience, but you've got to really, you know, sit down and draw up, you know, what is the most important, prioritize things, and then keeping it simple and going through that process so you can deliver it in a way that's fun, intensive, passionate. So I think that's one thing that I found that works above all else is it's got to be passionate, it's got to be intense, it's got to be fun.
Yeah, that's great. And then, all right, and then so from Cameron, what's his influence on you as a coach?
I would say Cameron, because he's a tour coach, works with players on the tour on the women's and the men's side. We actually have someone on the WTA that's working with him now. Actually, was hitting with one of my 16-year-olds yesterday in one of the sessions we had, and just that type of level brings a whole nother perspective. It's funny. I was talking to my friend who's on the WTA that was working yesterday, and she was hitting with my 16-year-old, and I began to ask her questions. It's so interesting how simple she puts it. You know, just the whole conversation, there's nothing really, it's not a whole lot of detail involved. You know, one thing she says, you just can't think. You can't get out here and think about what you're going to do. You need to get out here, get in position, hustle for every ball, you know, go for every ball, keep your feet moving. I mean, just simple things that really work. But, you know, just the coaching environment that he creates, that of being intense, being fun, and just being focused. A lot of technical things I've picked up from him. Again, back to the simplicity, specific footwear patterns that are more efficient. Because you can be a lot more effective if you're more efficient. So things like that. It's just being around him and just coaching beside him, listening to him. We've talked about language, how our language, you know, if you're in a more of an academy environment, you have multiple coaches. It's so important to have all the coaches using the same kind of terminology, the same kind of language. Because if kids move from court to court, from coach to coach, and they hear different words for different things, it can be really confusing for the junior player. And they get thinking way
too much.
That's a big thing for me.
That's really a powerful concept. Let me interject there for a second because, you know, I think what you're saying right now formerly was very controversial because, and I think some people would still kind of ridicule that thought. I think you're right. But, you know, I not too long ago went to a presentation that was like a two-hour thing, and it was like a very, very convoluted discussion of how to hit a great forehand. And there were like 17 different segments and analyses of movement. And within about 10 minutes, I turned to my friend. I said, "I'm not teaching any of this."
I don't
want to learn this, and I don't want to teach it, and I'm not going to.
Right.
And so I'm pretty sure that my student also doesn't want to hear it, doesn't want to learn it. I think Ken's pretty similar to Oscar Wagner, who I'm a big fan of. And the same thing about Oscar. Oscar has been derided for his simplicity, but I think he's genius. So,
well, I think there's levels of simplicity in my mind because, you know, there's a simplicity of teaching a 6 to 8 year old, and then it, you know, from you go the different levels of ages on up. You know, with Cameron and I, like Cameron and I were working together, and we have students floating between courts. I mean, Cameron and I have two different personalities, and you can maintain your personality and your passion, and yet still have this flow of language that's similar, you know, this philosophy that's there's a similar passion for the same type of philosophy. you know, there's just certain I just know over 20 years of coaching, I know there's certain things that work and certain things that don't work, certain things that work better than others. And so I've just tended to lean over the years with the things that really work and get results. And they're things that when the kids leave, they can actually go and actually it shows up in a match situation. It shows up on the court in competition. And that's what's important. That's how you can tell as a coach whether what you're doing is working or it's not working. Is it showing up in competition, you know, under the gun, you know, with the fire? When the fire comes, does it show up? That's the question.
Yeah. And you know, that reminds me, I mean, just last week, you know, Oscar, who I consider a friend now, posted a interesting article about the difference between thinking and performance. And so I think what you're saying really, you know, keys that in. If there's simplicity and it's simple, it's also easy to understand and execute, then you don't have to think about 17 different things while you're trying to hit a ball, right?
Right, right, sure.
So now in these simple instructions, what would you say is one of the more common kind of simple things that you teach and or remind your players to do?
Well, I ask them, I ask the juniors, they look, what part of your body sees the ball? They go, your eyes. Okay, what part of your body moves to the ball? They say, your feet. Okay, well, I'm not going to tell you to move your feet because you're going to just tell me where. Where do I move my feet, coach? So abstract. So I say, get into position. Get into position for the ball. Receive the ball beside yourself, okay? So we spend a lot of time as coaches teaching people how to send the ball, but we need to really understand. We got to teach them how to receive the ball. So we say things like get in position for the shot. See the ball. You know, gaze into that. When you hit the ball, just gaze into that place like Federer does, you know. Things like that. You know, finish your stroke. You know, I would say, you know, receiving the ball is huge. I was just working with one of my 10-year-old girls today who just picked up the game a few months ago. And it's amazing you start talking about getting in position. It tells them something that's viable. They can really kind of get their head around, I got to get myself in position. I got to get the ball beside me. I got to get it between my shoulders and my knees. That's my strike zone, you know. So learning to get in position for the ball is huge. And there's lots of different things you can do to make that happen. So.
You reminded me of a couple of things. One, I think my listeners are going to get sick of me telling about how I took over a junior program where everybody had modern-looking strokes, but nobody had a contact point. And okay. They didn't want to learn contact point because that took away from their modern-looking strokes. So the other one is I just had a kid come to me and her family migrated from Bosnia, and really sweet kid. And she comes for her first lesson, and we get done with the lesson, and I say, all right, well, what did you learn today? And this 11-year-old girl says that I need to get in position for the ball so that I can hit it in the middle of my strings and make my shot while I'm on balance.
Absolutely. Yep.
Congratulations, you're like 99th percentile of all 11-year-old girls in the United States right now. So,
well, I mean, try teaching a 9-year-old girl from Slovakia who can't speak any English. I did that about 2 months ago, and we went through it was a 35-minute lesson, and I couldn't even use English because she didn't understand the English. So showing her how to get in position and shadowing, things like that, shadowing, copying, things like that. So you can get someone, you can get a kid to hit the ball without saying anything. I mean,
how did it feel to not be able to talk? Wow.
It was amazing.
That was tough. All right, so let's move forward a little bit. Now, I was looking at your LinkedIn, and I saw that you are a certified life coach. So I'd like to sign up for some life coaching. So
we can work that out.
Can you help me out with my life?
Absolutely. Listen.
Let's get went for some life coaching yesterday, and I'm looking to follow up here. So How do you coach me?
Well, you know, being on a tennis court, playing a game of tennis, is so much like life. There are so many lessons you can learn on a tennis court and literally apply them to your life, anything in your life. Self-control, patience, remaining calm in times when things are falling apart around you. You know, just understanding that you're going to make mistakes, and that's cool. That's the biggest thing is I don't yell at my kids when they make a mistake. I want them to make mistakes. I want them to go for it. Because the one thing that will hold you back on a tennis court in life is fear. Fear of hitting the ball. Fear of going for it. Fear of staying in a controlled, you know, mindset. You know, you just let, you know. So it's pretty amazing what you can learn relating those two, if you will.
Yeah, that's interesting. I completely agree with you. And one thing that I always send the message to my teams when I'm coaching a team is day one, I'll remind them how many people died in war in the 20th century and how many people were killed by their own country. And they're looking at me like, why are you talking about this? And I said, well, if we go undefeated, we're not bringing any of those people back.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go 1-16, we're not adding to the number. Now, let's go play tennis as if we maybe could, but the pressure's off. You don't have to worry about me. We're not, you know, if we don't win the championship, I don't care. You know,
I told my varsity girls just recently, I said, you know, the only thing you can do to disappoint me as your coach is playing not to lose. Because when you play not to lose, you always lose, no matter what the score is. Because you walk off the court, you feel like you could have done more. You feel like you could have given more. You felt like you brought stuff off the court with you that you could have laid right there on the court. And it's interesting, man. Those girls, and these are high school girls, and they just, over time, you say that, you get it in that their mindset, their paradigm, and they go, you know what, coach is right. I always feel like, you know, I could have just gone for it. And I've had girls lose and they went for it and they came off the court. They go, you know what, coach? I played great. I lifted all on the court. Yeah, I lost, but you know what? I can do some things better and we're gonna work on those, but you know what? It's okay. And so the proof is there, I'm telling you, it's there.
All right, so let's go a little deeper here now. You know, the other thing I got was your quote on LinkedIn, which I liked, and we're going to kind of take it sentence by sentence. But let me read the whole thing, and then I want you to kind of flesh out what does each sentence mean in a little more detail. So it says, science is crucial to helping players excel. Observation in place of judgment opens your eyes as a coach to see where improvements need to occur. Understanding the geometry of the court, knowing style of play, improving physical capabilities, stretching mental capacity are all part of this growth process. Rhythm and dynamic balance are key components for your competitive players to reach their maximum potential. I'll do your voiceover later if you want. But all right, so let's talk about science being crucial to players excelling.
Yeah.
Is that observation piece?
Yes, it is huge. One of my first influencers on this was Vic Braden. He was probably the pioneer of using science and video and showing things, you know, debunking myths like top spin is created by the rolling of your wrist. No, it's created by the elevation of your racket at impact. So things like that, and video has been a tremendous aspect in that, so using that. But science, physics, the physics of the court, the geometry of the court, understanding angles, you know, and this, honestly, if you keep it simple, you can teach young kids this idea of physics and geometry. You know, if a ball's coming in at a very sharp angle, well, I change directions on it. you know, it's harder to change the direction of a sharp angle than it is to just send it back on the where it came from. And with older kids, you say on the plane, right there, and in that line. So you can change your terminology or your language to fit the student. But science is huge. How your body works. You know, if you feel like you're struggling to hit a ball, then it's not natural. You know, there are certain footwork techniques that you can get right from the beginning. Loading on the outside foot and then stepping in, or loading and hitting off that foot, things like that, hitting off the back foot. That used to be a no-no, but anyway.
So
really, really helping kids understand that it's more than just hitting a ball. It's
right.
It's what's behind hitting the ball. You know, the idea behind it.
Let's kind of redirect things here a little bit, Sterling, for a second, because what I was trying to get to was observation versus judgment. You know, observation in place of judgment. So can you kind of flesh that out?
Okay, here we go. So a ball, when it's hit, it's not a good or a bad ball. It's just a ball. It's a yellow ball. And when kids hit a ball out, they think they're bad. It's a bad ball. And they hit it in, that was a good ball. Well, they take it personally. They say, well, I hit the ball out, I'm a bad player because it was a bad ball. Or I hit the ball in, it was a good ball, I'm a good player. Not necessarily. I mean, you hit a shot that was either in or out. So as a coach, I look at it and go, look, trying to get the student to observe what happened instead of judge what happened. Okay, observe, where did it go out? Was it wide in the net or long? There's only three places you can miss. Okay, so just understanding that and being able to do it. Determine what is the difference between judgment and observation, and what does that mean? Because kids take it personally. I mean, more so than adults. I mean, I've seen some adults take it really personally. Like, look, move out of the house of judgment and move into the house of observation. You're not a bad person because you keep missing it in the net. It's just you need a little bit more height.
And I think also that when people are in subjective judgment, that if they hit what they think is a good shot, then what's the next thing they do? They feel pressure to do it again.
Absolutely.
And then that pressure
actually strive to do it.
Missed shot, and then they go, oh, bad shot. I knew I couldn't do it twice in a row. You know, how many times do you see a 3-5 player? How many times do you see a 3-5 player or lower follow up an ace with a double fault?
I see it in high school kids where they're really, really good. So that's very important, that part.
Yeah, so the phrase I like is objective observation, because part of it is to leave the subjectivity out of it. It's, you know, it was out and it was out by 5 feet, you know. So now you missed by 3 feet, so that's closer. So then there's better, you know, awareness of what's happening on the court that way.
You made a better mistake.
So let's go on to understanding the geometry of the court. You kind of talked a little bit about that. So what is it that you're teaching when it comes to geometry?
Well, we teach when it comes to geometry, we don't play tennis straight ahead in a straight line. We usually play on the angles. We get into a deuce court rally or an ad court rally, or we go forehand rally or cross court or backhand rally. So we work on margins, use the rope above the net, you know, for height, because we want to get height in the equation to clear the net. We use cones, put them together, and on the same side of the court. We hit through the cones that are obviously on the ground, but through the cones to eliminate margins missing wide. And so the kids begin to pick up, hey, if I hit through these cones that are 6 or 7 feet apart, then I'm not going to miss wide. Okay, so I've eliminated 33% of my unforced errors right there. Then if I clear this rope, I'm going to eliminate the net. So now I've eliminated 2/3 of my possible unforced errors. Now all I got to deal with is depth. So I control it by speed or spin. So it's interesting that all that is the working the geometry of the court, hitting, working on angles, responding cross court with cross court unless you get a short ball. Just really educating the junior player as they are playing instead of just trying to groove out 5,000 forehands cross court. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one thing I like to do with a group, like let's say, I mean, at my camp this summer, I had a pretty good group of kids. So I was like, all right, here, we're going to do the running forehand drill going across the court, also known as the windshield wiper. And your job here is to hit cross court on these balls. And then I'm going to time it, and I'm going to see how long it takes for the group to hit 25 shots into the target area. So we time it, and it takes like 3 minutes. Okay, excellent. Then what we do is have them take that same cross-court ball that I'm hitting to them, and then they have to try to hit it down the line. And the accuracy goes way down. And so then they're not able to hit 20 shots into the target area for about 7 to 10 minutes. So then I'm like, okay, well, why was that more difficult? And then they don't know. So then we talk
right.
about it.
They don't know.
Can you change the direction of the ball? You need better timing.
Right.
So
kind of like not explaining the difference between an inside out and an inside in forehand.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of kids go, I'm hitting inside out. Well, they don't know where that term came from. Well, you think about the inside of the court, moving from the doubles line in or the single line in, and then outside
yeah.
of the court is singles line or doubles line out. So you get a ball that's in the court, and you're hitting it toward the out part of the court, so an inside-out forehand, or an in, so you keep the ball, you're receiving the ball in the court, you keep the ball in the court, and inside-in, usually down the line, because the ball is not moving outside of the court once it lands. So things like that. And they begin to understand a little bit better about what they're actually doing, and it, like I said, it goes back to simplicity. You don't have to overdo this. You don't have to convolute it with a lot of language.
Right.
And just try to keep it simple. Try to understand who you're talking to. What's the age you're talking to? And even some adults that I'll work with, you know, sometimes they've heard so many coaching cliches over the years. If you just interject something simple like, I want you to touch the ball and finish, and you just show them, it's amazing what the transformation that happens. And then they get it. It sticks with them. They just don't learn it, go away, and then they come back and they forgot it. No, it stays with them because it's simple.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate those are great points. And so now when it comes to style of play, what do you talk about when you're saying knowing the style of play?
Well, you've got to observe as a coach. I mean, you can't just start your lesson out with, or at least this has been my experience, you can't just start out just working on drills. You've got to spend some time in hitting with the player or observing the player hitting with another player. Watch how they play. What are their tendencies? Do they just naturally run around a backhand that's or a ball that's right at them and hit the forehand, or do they move and hit the backhand? So not infringing upon trying as a coach not to meet the player's needs, not your own needs for the player. You know, a lot of times as coaches, I mean, especially if we were players and we grew up sometimes, and it's not always the case, but as coaches, we want them to do it the way we want them to do it or the way we think they should do it. And, you know, obviously there's technical things that are, you have to get sound technique, but the player has tendencies. They have personality. Let them have personality. You know, not
yeah.
everybody on the pro tour is serving with just this Federer-like serve. I mean, that's Fed. You know, Nadal is Nadal. Djokovic is Djokovic. Murray is Murray. And then you've got some of those other characters that on the tour that just, I mean, Roddick's serve was completely different from Federer's. That, look at the result. I mean, they both had results in their own measure, but it was completely different. But there's certain aspects of both their serves that are very similar, okay? So you've got to just be able to observe that as a coach, spend time observing it, being able to break it down. And we use video a lot on our iPads, on our iPhones, Androids, whatever you got. And we film the kids hitting with other players, and then we go look at it as coaches and go, okay, what is this? Is this personality or is this just a technical flaw? And we can, you know, there's so many resources out there for coaches. I just feel like sometimes we spend so much time on the court that we run out of gas and we don't continue educating ourselves. And that's
I think there's a lot of truth to it, and one very simple thing I say is that accountants are baseliners and artists play at the net, you know, because I look for those traits in what is my player like. I mean, accountants, that spreadsheet's got a balance at the end of the day for sure. They're going to want to play error-free as much as possible. So they're going to stay at the baseline.
Right.
They don't want to get passed.
Right.
They don't want to miss a volley. You know, they're going to grind it out. And then, you know, then you have the artist, the flamboyant, you know, wants to create something beautiful, and they'll come to the net, and they want to have flamboyant movement and spontaneity and, you know, hitting a forehand volley with a backhand grip on accident and winning the ball on a miss hit, you know. I think this is a great point that you're making, is to know those personalities and how it's going to affect how they want to play.
Right, you've got to spend time with the player's agenda. You can't just always have the coach's agenda on court during a lesson. I mean, it's very important. Obviously they're paying you for your professionalism, your expertise and your knowledge, your wisdom, experience. But really, it's really about, is the player having a good time here? Are you just frustrating them because you want them to play the way you want them to play? Now,
exactly.
That leads to the stretching to the mental capacity, I think. Is that coming up?
Oh, it's improving physical capabilities.
Yeah, there you go. So that ties, you know, it does tell in, that does tell into this point. You know, yeah, you have a player, okay, I have players that are, they love to stay on the baseline. They just love to just pound away, grind away, and I'm like, but they're going to play doubles on the team. So I'm like, well, you got to come to the net. You got to learn to play the net at some point. And so stretching them, challenging them, you've got to be creative as a coach, because if a kid is just determined to stay on the baseline, you've got to find a way as a coach to get through to that junior player or that adult that you're working with, and be creative in your challenging them. And so that's where the rubber meets the road, you know, between good coaches and great coaches and coaches that really want to excel, is learning from those in the past that have done things that have proven to work.
Let me interject there, because I have advice for high school coaches, especially coaches of players who are afraid to go to the net. So, because I have a progression that I do with my teams, and on day one of practice, I will simply hit the kids a short ball and have them come forward and make one volley, and we'll just do that repeatedly. Hit the short ball, make one volley, boom, 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 boom. No adjustments, no nothing, no criticism. Just do that, right? Then we'll go in and we'll kind of look at, you know, we'll look at how they were missing, and we'll talk about, all right, here's how you want to hit that volley. Then the next day, what we'll do is we'll play it as rule the court, which is what I call it when it's girls, because we don't want to play king of the court with girls necessarily, right? Who wants to be king, right? So we'll play rule the court, and you got your champion over there, and you feed the short ball to the challenger, and they have to win 3 points. But see, their mind is only on winning, so they don't reflect too long on having lost a point, just the fact that if you win 3 points, you get to be the champion. Then the next day, then what we do is we play one serve tennis, and so it's tiebreakers, and the champion, the server gets one serve, but the returner must come to the net because that's a short ball.
Right.
You know, and then everybody must do it, so nobody has an unfair advantage by not doing it. And then what we do is then we go into playing full sets, and then every second serve they must come to the net. And then it's really amazing. And then here's what I noticed after going through that. It's the next day, and we're not doing anything special, and the girl is able to recognize she's getting a short ball, and she just automatically comes to the net comfortably and puts away the volley, and then voila.
Right.
So,
you have to create an environment.
So thanks for indulging me with that, but I think that's one of the best tips I could ever give a high school coach to encourage the players and reduce the amount of fear and increase the confidence, all that stuff. Okay, so let's go on to stretching mental capacity.
Well, stretching it beyond fear, really. You know, getting beyond that play, getting them out of their idea that they're being good or bad is directly related to how I played today. You know, getting them to think with different paradigms, ways of thinking, getting them to relax their thinking by just focusing their thinking on specific things. For instance, had a girl was in a match the other day, playing varsity tennis, and on a changeover we can talk to them. So I just simply said, look, I said, you're doing great. Keep up the intensity. You know, simple thing. I didn't fill her mind with all this extra stuff. We didn't talk about the other player. I said, find your rhythm. Find your timing. Stay with your timing. Stay with your rhythm. Things like that. And it just, she went out and she just maintained good timing, good rhythm. And, you know, many times we think of stressing as like we're expanding it to like a lot of stuff or a lot more information. Actually, I'm looking at it differently. I'm stretching out the information where it stretches into something simple. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that's also great advice for any team coach that's got that, you know, you've got that changeover where you maybe have 30 seconds to talk. And so what are you going to say? You know, one or two very simple things that are doable. That's it.
And girls, encouragement is what they need the most. Encouragement. Because we're very emotional. I mean, girls typically can become more emotional than boys. You know, boys can kind of compartmentalize, take the emotion out of it, you know, just grind. And for them, it's challenging to get them to be a little bit more emotional, you know, show that a little bit more fist pump when they do something well, or, you know, to have self-control and not blow up emotionally when they miss a bad shot, when they miss a shot that they think is bad. But it was simply a miss. And they were in position, they just missed it. Hey, it happened. Move on.
Let's talk a little bit more about stretching mental capacity. So what are like two or three things that where you find players, you know, don't really need to expand their mental capacity? What's probably the most common one?
I would say having being able to think through before they actually get on the court, some tactical things, some strategic things. For instance, we work a lot on 1-3 and 2-4 exchanges, which is the first four balls of a point. I mean, the average point lasts about four hits or less. Okay.
Yeah.
We mapped out 12,000 points over a 3-month period had in high school tennis, and the average hit with those 12,000 points, six matches, let's say it was 36 matches, was 2.7 hits, was the average
wow.
number of hits per point. And so my kids actually did it. They tracked the points themselves and had them do it. And then we, because I told them at the beginning of the season, look, it's only four shots are left. If you can master those shots, serve, and then the third ball that comes back, or return, which is the second ball, and then the fourth ball, you can master those and do it every single point and eliminate some unforced errors. You're going to have a great, you're going to put yourself in a great position, opportunity to win the match. And that's what we did a whole season. And we ended up beating a team that had never been beat in the 15 years of school history, and we beat them twice that year. And both scores were 5-4. And when we looked at the match and the hit, it came down to we were better on 1-3 and 2-4 exchanges. They made more errors on those first four
points. So, I think I know what you mean, and it kind of describes short cross-court, deep to the other side. So it's short, deep combinations, one, you know, short ball to the backhand and deep ball to the forehand, or say
more general than that.
Man?
Yeah, it's more general than that. It's just simply when I serve, that's the first ball I hit.
Okay.
The second ball that's hit is the return of serve. And then I hit the third ball, and then they hit the fourth ball. So if I'm serving, I need to concentrate on my serve, my serve, and the third ball. Now, we work on zones. Yeah, you're talking about the zones of the court, like hitting it in zone three and then coming to zone one. I got you on that. But, no, we're just talking about basically on a consistency level. And then it can feed into what you just said. We can work the serve, and then we can work the third ball to another zone, things like that. Yeah, we work on that as well. But we start with that simplistic foundation of serve and then the third ball. And then when you're returning.
Let me jump in here because, I think maybe people don't understand that probably 75% or more of the kids out there, after they hit their serve, they're thinking, oh, congratulations to me. I just made my serve. Now what?
Right.
Or the return.
They hit a great return. They stop.
So they don't really know what they're going to do with that next ball. And so what it sounds like what you're saying is if you know that you've served there and the ball might come here, then what's your next shot and do
exactly.
something good next ball, and then you'll take charge of that point.
Right. Great players do something with every single ball they get. They just don't spin the ball back. That's not a great player. A great player you look at the tour players, okay, because, I mean, obviously they're making money, a lot of money at doing this, most of them. And so they do something with every ball. What are you going to do with this next ball? What position are you going to be in? So that's the idea of stretching their mental capacity. And, again, you've got to keep it in a simplistic, understandable way that's geared to that age. And but you'd be surprised how smart kids are if you just press them a little bit. Sometimes I think we don't challenge them enough. But also we got to be creative. So that's a part of it. But stretching.
All right. So let's move on to rhythm and dynamic balance.
Okay.
How do you teach rhythm?
Well, I use examples. I mean, I say for the boys, I'm like, look, you ever seen Roger Federer play? They go, yeah. I go, is he smooth or is he just jerky and just kind of all over the place? And, oh, they're like, he's smooth. Okay. So let's talk about that. So we begin to talk about, and I use open-ended questions. You know, what, when, how, and when. Okay. I try never use the word why. And I try not to ask why, because that tends to put a defense mechanism up, because people want to defend themselves when you ask them a why question. But, you know, how did that feel? Or what does that look like? What does it look like to be smooth? Show me right now. You know, go out and shadow a forehand. Show me what it looks like, what you think it looks like to be smooth. So you're talking about rhythm of the game. What did it feel like? Did you feel in balance? Did you land? Were you balanced when you finished, or did you feel unbalanced or off balance? So a lot of that is, you know, we use hand feed drills for that. We'll do, you know, back it up, go from the pros at the net, then back it up a little bit more, pros at the baseline, and we just kind of moderate from that. But yeah, just experimenting with the player, asking them open-ended questions, not feeding them, you know, 20 balls and then asking them. Feed them 6 balls and then ask them. Then feed them another series of 6 balls and then say, well, what was different about that series of balls? Did you feel anything different in your rhythm or in your timing? Did you feel like you rushed this ball or that ball? And then you get them to talk to you, because when they begin to hear themselves talk about how they feel, and now you're getting somewhere, because I don't think I've ever seen a press conference on the pro tour where they go in and the first question is, well, how do you think you played today? And they go, well, I really thought that I played this way. No, they go, you know, I felt like I really didn't hit the ball well today. I didn't really feel like my timing was good, or I just didn't feel good. They say feel. So, you know, that's kind of the approach we take when we take to rhythm and dynamic balance, is we're asking open-ended questions to the player, getting feedback, and that's important. Hugely important.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really ever heard it said like that, and I think it's a really keen observation, so that makes me want to really reflect on that. I might probably put that into my teaching today here in a little bit.
There you go.
So now, yeah, thanks. I mean, I don't know how to react to that, but I think that that's something really good to think about. And
that's a discussion. So, yeah, you could go on an hour about that. I mean, that's a huge discussion to just open up Q&A on. So anyway.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's one thing I love about Oscar Wagner is, you know, his thing is find the ball, feel it, and finish it. And, you know, it sounds so incredibly simple, but yet the whole discovery of how to feel the ball is really an important thing, and it kind of leads to that open-ended discussion. But let's shift gears here, because at Jeff's backyard party, we were having that great discussion, right? And
yeah.
We were talking about cheating, you know, and how do you teach your kids to deal with that? And
yeah.
You know, my philosophy, and I think yours is pretty hardcore, but I like it. So can you get into the way that you teach your players to present themselves when the other player is making bad calls?
Well, I think, you know, I did an experiment, okay, to see how well kids could actually see. And so I put a squad on 12 high school players on the one baseline. I went to the other baseline, and I placed balls all along the baseline across. So it's 78 feet away. They're all standing still, so they're not moving. I placed all the balls around the baseline, and I placed them all where they were out. Every single ball was out, but some were out by a lot, some were out by a little, you know. And so I didn't tell anybody, and I went over there or where the balls were, or you get my drift. Anyway, so I asked the kids, okay, tell me how balls are in or out. So I had kids telling me 3, 7, 10, 14, 2. Nobody said 0. Everybody said there was a ball in. So one ball was in. They were all out. So my point was, look, if you can't see a ball that you're standing still 78 feet away, how can you really pick it up when it's moving at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 miles an hour? You can't. So if it's close, you just play it. I mean, come on. You know, it's – so we spent a lot of time on it's the integrity. It's your integrity, your intensity. It's not, you know, yes, we all hate to lose. We want to win. I'm all for that. I want to win every match I go out and play. But I understand it's not going to happen, okay? 64 people in a tournament, one person wins. There are 63 losers, okay? I mean, but it doesn't make them a loser. It just makes them – they lost that match at that time. So
right. What
I teach is if it's one grievance, okay, look, chill out. You'll get it back. It'll come back. I mean, they'll miss a call or they'll double fault. You'll get it back. It's all good. If it's a repetitive thing, say, you know, it happens again. It's kind of like, are you sure that was in? And they're like, yes, it was in. Third time, like, it's obvious. You see it's obvious. It's a sideline call. I tell them to leave baselines alone because they can't see the baseline. But sidelines, if it's in, obviously, and there's a mark, you're playing a play, you're like, so you call them to the net. I have my players say, hey, can you give me a minute? So they come up to the net, and they go, look, I understand we missed calls, and that's great, but this is like your third one, and if you're not going to treat me like this, because I'm not going to be treated like this, and if it happens again, I'm just going to call for a lines judge. And usually when that happens, like I have my kids, they have to rehearse it, and I mean, they have to do it with class and respect, but they've got to be firm and say, look, you're not going to treat me like this. I tell my kids all the time, I have three kids. I say, you give people permission for the way they treat you. And
yeah.
So if you're going to be a doormat, then they're going to run all over you. But if you stand up and you're classy, you can be classy about it, you can be excellent in your attitude, and you can be firm and not mean and nasty, people will respect you for that. And kids need to be taught that by coaches on a tennis court. It is ridiculous in this nation that we have so many kids, and I don't blame the kids because most of them are half blind anyway. I mean, kids just can't see. The adults
yeah.
can't see. I mean, look, the ball's flying at 50, 60, 80, 90 miles an hour. I mean, some calls people just miss, okay? So you've got to get them to manage that energy, be self-control, and address it. So when they do that, it works. It's all
okay, great.
You got to be a leader.
So
you got to be a leader.
We have about a minute left now. So we had a couple of people who tried calling in, but I don't really take callers. What I do is I ask people to send me questions via email. So
gotcha.
I had a couple people try calling in. I didn't answer. So sorry about that, folks. Thanks for trying. But
you can call me if you know me.
Well, we'll get your info. So here's the deal. Two things. Number one, if you had to sum up this episode of this conversation in two sentences, how would you do that? And if you can give your contact information so that the callers then can ask you their question, then they'll probably even get a better answer that way. So
okay.
How would you sum up this conversation, and what's your contact info?
Okay, let's do contact first. It's xceltennis @gmail.com. It's xceltennis, one word, @gmail.com. So
great.
I would say to sum it up, you know, I'm a passionate person by nature. And I think that the biggest thing as a coach, as a tennis coach, for me personally, is I have got to spend time educating myself. No matter how tired I am throughout the day, I've got to spend time at some point. And I have three kids and a lovely wife, and I have a busy life. So I find time. People can find time to educate themselves on these things, how to be creative, how to interject science, how to, you know, keep it simple, keep it fun, keep it intense, meet the player's needs, and just kind of put your own idea of what you think should happen and relax. I think if more USA coaches would, you know, relax about who's going to be the next American champion, someone's going to show up, but it's going to show up in the grassroots in some place that you've never heard of. They're going to come out of this because they came out of a coaching environment that cared about the player and more about them as a person than them as actually someone who can hit tennis balls over a 3-foot net at the center.
Sterling, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Have a great Saturday.
Yes, thank you, Bill, and awesome talking with you. My love goes out to all my California friends.
All right, and then, make sure, keep listening, keep listening to the show, share it with people. There's a lot of good stuff that people have to share. I love that I learn something new every show. So enjoy your Saturday. Take care.
Thank you, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, so thank you. coming on the show. If you're listening live, there's going to be a little bit more that comes up after the recording of the podcast continues here. So the live show just ended, and now we're in the podcast type of area. So I just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate the fact that you're listening to the show and all the shows on the UR Tennis Network. I'm also excited to be able to offer web services that offer complete websites or great modules that allow your members to do court scheduling, online enrollment, or give your site a strong mobile device presence. Check out your site on a mobile device and see how it looks. We can make your current site more powerful and efficient. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. You can reach me at infinitetennis8@gmail.com. infinitetennis8@gmail.com. I'm also available in the 510 and the 925 for tennis lessons. And is my custom, I will leave you with this. Any moment now.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about. And the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly. Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.